Hey folks, welcome back. I'm Abby Higginbotham, and you're tuning in to Cannabis Insider. With me, as always, is Pato Little.
Thank you, Abby, and hello everyone joining us today. We got something cool lined up, actually. Cam Horan, the brains behind Highway 33 Capital Advisory, is joining us today. So if you're into the business side of cannabis, you'll want to hear this. Highway 33 is all about big moves in the finance world. We're talking actually deals over 100 million monthly.
Dive into this with us. The industry is expecting big changes, especially with potential legal shifts. So we're discussing what these developments could signify for investors and businesses in the cannabis world. Let's go. Cam, it is great to have you with us. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me here, guys.
Absolutely. So I think we're just going to jump right into it. Pato, do you think so?
Of course, yes. Cam, thrilled to have you for this episode of Cannabis Insider. So to jump right into our questions, can you please provide like a high-level overview of Highway 33's 2024 outlook for cannabis investing, and mainly what makes you optimistic about the market's recovery?
Yeah, so let me give just a little detour in that as well, and just that we focus on the private markets and M&A and debt capital raising. As an investment banking intermediary. So we certainly have our viewpoints on the public markets as well, which I'll go into, but a lot of my conclusions are trying to draw conclusions really for what's going to happen to the broad cannabis markets, particularly the private markets. All that said, we're very excited about 2024. It's been a rough few years. If you go back to the spring of 2021, when just after Biden was elected, there was a lot of enthusiasm. That enthusiasm played itself out publicly with the publicly traded cannabis companies. And then fast forward to the end of last fall, beginning of this winter, and those stocks were down 91%, which is, I think, fair to say, a deep bear market. But as we go into 2024, here we are in February, we're looking at a lot of those stocks have started to bounce back. Nothing huge, but the indices for the publicly traded groups are showing some movement. And, you know, there's two things potentially on the horizon, one of which we think is likely and the other, which we think is very unlikely. So, you know, we think that rescheduling is very likely, and we can get into that more as the conversation progresses here. And we think that safe banking is pretty unlikely, given the history and where things are at in Congress. And I don't think I need to give a long lecture here on the challenges that Congress faces. I'll just leave it at that. But we're excited. We think rescheduling can be catalytic. And by that, I mean spur the public companies' growth in their stock prices. And downstream, though it won't happen overnight, once that effect impacts the public companies, once institutional investors see the promise that they will see if rescheduling is implemented, which I firmly believe it will be this year, then I think we'll see more liquidity flow into the market.
It seems like a positive outlook on your end. And I kind of wanted to talk about drawing from, you have to be in with everything going on. But drawing from your expertise and experience in finance and M&A, how do you approach the challenges and opportunities in the cannabis world compared to other industries you've worked in?
Well, the first thing I'll say is cannabis isn't quite as different to me as I think some people think it is from other markets. A lot of my background comes from the healthcare industry, which is highly regulated by the government. So there are some real similarities to other highly regulated markets. I can't tell you about transportation or other markets beyond that, but I do know healthcare and frankly, a lot of the same agencies at the state level that oversee cannabis are the same agencies that oversee health and human services. So, I think that there are more similarities than people think. All that said, there are some distinct challenges that affect cannabis for both finance and transactional. Some of the unique things, and I'll pick on the big one first because I think it's going to be removed. That's 280E taxes. So I'm sure most of your listeners will know, if not all of them, but 280E taxes are, of course, being taxed by the federal government IRS based on gross profits rather than net profits, which means the effective tax rates for some cannabis companies can be as high as 40 or 50% of their, you know, sometimes of revenue. So it's extremely debilitating from a cash flow perspective for the companies. It causes investors to value the companies for less, because cash flow is usually the key indicator for value in most all markets, cannabis largely included. So, you know, that's a big one that I think will be removed. Well, it will be removed if there's rescheduling from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, which is what we expect. And I think most commentators expect from the DEA after the recommendation from Health and Human Services. So there are some things like 280E that are distinct and cause some challenges compared to other markets. That's probably the biggest one. Some others, you know, there are regulatory issues in terms of license transfers that certainly make the M&A process a bit slower and a little more challenging for buyers as well as sellers. But a lot of the other regulatory issues are, you know, whether you're being regulated at the state level by your cannabis authority, or whether you're being regulated by, you know, the State Department of Pharmacy or the FDA, a lot of similarities beyond that. But there are some crucial differences that I just outlined.
Thank you. That's a very interesting insight, Cam. And I was going to ask you about Safe Banking Act, but given you think it's not going to be possible yet, maybe my question won't
add. I mean, I'm happy to field questions. I wish I was wrong on that. I'm sure you guys have followed the beat over the past years of, you know, we think it's going to happen. We think it's going to happen. It's not going to happen. I like the idea that the rescheduling can happen without legislative action. I think that's a big deal. I'm a jack of many trades, master of none. At the beginning of my career, I was actually a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. So I have some background and insight on what it takes to get legislation through. And again, without angering either side, I would say that there are some distinct challenges that have nothing to do with cannabis that will make it very challenging for that bill to get through.
No, I think that's the most... Oh, sorry, Abby.
No, I was just going to say, spoken like someone who's spent time in D.C. Very well said.
Well, I spent a little bit of time, but then I had to get out. This is too much for me. I felt too crazy. So then I got in the cannabis industry, if D.C. wasn't crazy enough.
Yeah, no, that actually answers perfectly the question I was going to ask you. So I'm going to jump now to the rescheduling topic, mm-hmm. because I think that's, given that the Safe Banking Act, it's, again, as you say, it's very hard that that becomes, again, a reality, and that would have been a really catalyst for growth for the industry. So jumping to rescheduling now, I based on your report, rescheduling is expected to increase valuations and M&A activity in the industry. So how do you advise companies to prepare for these changes?
Yeah, so for the operating companies, it's really, the advice is no different than usual, which is make sure your accounting is tight. Make sure you've got good quality of earnings. And by that, I mean that your accounting is tight, and your EBITDA and your net profits and your tax liabilities are all well known, and you've brought in credible, credible accountants to at least do financial reviews, so that they're prepared for, you know, most types of transactions. We also are basically telling the buy side that this is a great time to be in the market. Right now, they're on the precipice of valuation arbitrage, is I think what I'd call it, right? You know, publicly traded companies, these numbers won't be exact. So, you know, don't quote me like the Wall Street Journal here, but, you know, the publicly traded EBITDA multiples or, you know, trailing multiples, they're trading at about 8 to 10. Private markets for single state operators, smaller operations, you know, trading 2 to 4 times EBITDA right now, depending on the state, depending on the asset. So there's a real opportunity here on the buy side for buyers to be in this market now. I will say that a lot of our savvy and sophisticated buyers are starting to really, you know, be more aggressive with transactions. There are still some folks, primarily folks that are essentially institutional money that are still, you know, they'd rather give up a little bit of the arbitrage and wait until there's more certainty. And I think that's absolutely going to be the case in the public markets as well, where there's going to be folks that are going to say, gee, that sounds great, you know, but what Health and Human Services put out does not is not what's going to be implemented necessarily. We need to hear from the DEA. But I do think that the DEA notice is going to come relatively soon. No one knows exactly when that will happen, but there's some political logic to the process wrapping up before the November election, i.e., I think, you know, again, don't want to get in the middle of people's political views, but I think it's fair to say that Biden could use help. And, you know, there's certainly a group of voters out there. There's, as you guys know, very strong national approval for cannabis. And I think that if they're going to do something politically, they're going to want to get that done before the election and capture those voters that will be positively impressed by it. I think we're going to see it come relatively soon. It's a two-step process, though. The first step is, just so your listeners understand, well, actually, we'll call it a three-step process. The first step already happened. Health and Human Services made a recommendation. Now the DEA needs to put out an interim rule, which is basically writes up with a draft, the interim is really a draft, and everyone can provide notice and comment on that draft. And then once they have notice and comment on the draft, they will then and can issue a final rule, which is, as it states, is final. So, you know, I think if they get the interim rule out there in the next couple months, 2-3 months at the latest, then they'll have, I think, enough time to get the final rule out by the fall. That could falter, but I would imagine that there's at least some political pressure from the White House to have folks get things done. Doesn't mean DEA will be responsive to it, but there are certainly people in the DEA as well as other agencies that serve at the pleasure. So there'll be at least some motivation to get that done.
Two things here. I want to go back to the topic of your, like, I don't want to get too into the political aspect of it. This is what this show's about. Please do. You are welcome to share your thoughts. Obviously, I know certain things you don't want to, you know, delve into too much. But jumping to my next question, you mentioned, like, in your outlook, not all companies will benefit equally from the rescheduling. Sure. So my question would be, which states or market segments do you see offering the most promising opportunities for growth?
Right. So I think that the states that are less mature are going to see a faster uptick. We're already seeing more activity in some of those states. New Jersey is a good example, but New Jersey, Missouri, Illinois, the more mature states. I'm a Denver resident here in Colorado. You know, Colorado, Oregon, Washington, maybe Michigan, although we're seeing a good amount of activity in Michigan, but some of the more legacy states are going to see a little less activity, I think, for a couple of reasons. One, buyers are looking in these nascent states for, a growth rate that's going to be much higher. You know, some of the legacy states, again, I'll pick on my home state here, the growth is starting to even out. And, you know, as other states, surrounding states, approve cannabis, the tourism aspect declines in states. So that's one of the market dynamics. But the newer states, the nascent states, some of which I just mentioned, I should also mention Ohio. I really like Ohio as a state for great growth in the coming years. Mm-hmm. All of those states are really going to see probably the first activity, even though they won't have as many mature companies with substantial revenue and EBITDA. So again, you know, there's Baskin Robbins 31 flavors when it comes to buyers. Some people want Rocky Road and some people want Mint Chip. That's okay.
I love the comparison.
Yeah, right. Don't mean to make you hungry or anything. So anyway, I think the states that will benefit most are the nascent states. I think the companies that will benefit most, I think smaller MSOs could see some great opportunities, smaller to even mid-sized MSOs, as companies look to consolidate. You know, there's different types of roll-ups. And I come out of that world before being an intermediary and an investment banker. I worked in private equity, so I've done some roll-ups in the healthcare space and certainly work with a lot of buyers right now and in the past in cannabis that are also doing roll-ups. But for, you know, to be a good candidate or a good target for the roll-ups, aside from being in the right state, certainly groups that have some scale, I think, will really benefit. I.e., if you have, you know, 10 stores, you're going to be a more attractive target than someone who has one store. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So then going from there, I think the companies that, whether it's one store or many stores, or whether they're, you know, a MIP, a producer or a cultivator, I think that folks that are producing significant EBITDA are going to, you know, find good opportunities. Cannabis is, I'm sure you and your listeners know, has morphed over time and looking at, you know, the valuation is, hey, it's a percent of revenue. Really morphing to more traditional markets, which, you know, traditional private equity markets and private markets would be, you know, a multiple of EBITDA. And that the market has moved closer to that, although not entirely, because when you're talking about a license that doesn't have any operations, then you're not valuing it on revenue or EBITDA. So, you know, there's some variation, but I would say over the last 3-4 years, we are moving ever closer to being like other markets with regard to valuation metrics, including multiple of EBITDA. So again, companies with significant EBITDA, I think, are going to see more opportunities. Where it's going to be tougher are companies that are, you know, essentially break even or losing money, you know, in states that are slower growth or no growth, for obvious reasons. Those assets are going to be, you know, are not going to turn around as fast in terms of their value as folks with high EBITDA in growth states, significant revenue, and possibly in multiple states.
Yeah, that response was back with the information. Thanks for that, Cam. Actually, you made me think of the kind of the whirlwind that the cannabis ETFs went through the last year, and with some of them recovering, maybe signaling also the impact of these positive adjusted EBITDA on the broader market. So I wanted to pick you one last question about your report. Could you share maybe one key takeaway from the report that you believe every cannabis investor and entrepreneur should keep in mind for 2024 and beyond?
Yeah, I mean, my personal advice, whether you're investing in public equities or you're in the private side of the market and you're looking at acquisitions, I think that this is an incredible time to get into the market and execute and either, you know, add to your positions or get positions in strong companies if they're publicly traded. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm accumulating. I think this is the right time to do it. You know, I don't think it's too early. You know, if you're on the private side and you're an operating company looking to sell or buy, I think the opportunity is going to be fantastic. You know, for the buyers, you're going to, you know, if you've got access to public markets or you plan to have access to public markets, there's going to be a significant EBITDA arbitrage. But even for the sellers, I think that as we get closer to the, you know, once the announcement's made, every single seller that has free cash flow is going to be redoing their models. And their after-tax cash flow is going to increase dramatically when you remove 280E from the equations. So I think for sellers, there's great opportunity, maybe a little farther off for those that can hold out. But even for those that can't, you know, I think we'll start seeing incremental market improvement in terms of the demand for assets, for good assets. And I think also for the pricing of those assets, because supply and demand, guys, you know, every market, cannabis is no different. If we have more demand to meet the supply, then price is going to be improved.
Exactly.
And I just want to say, it's nice. It's refreshing to hear your optimism on this. I knew, obviously, the market's ever changing. And so some people can be, you know, say it's volatile, a little bit pessimistic about it. It's nice to hear that there's some optimism in it. But Cam, I will say, I think that's a great place to leave off. And yeah, thank you so much just for being here, diving into this. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure, guys.
That's it for today, Cannabis Insider. Before we go, I want to share that you shouldn't miss out any of the Benzinga's content we put out daily. Be on the lookout for upcoming events, of course, from Cannabis Market Spotlight in LA to our Benzinga Capital Conference in April. We also have virtual events coming up. So for more information on how to get involved, check out benzinga.com/events. And we, as we always remind you, please don't forget to stay connected with us on all our social media channels for the freshest cannabis news updates. And if you feel like, you can also follow me and Abby. Stay green, stay informed, and we'll catch up next time. Bye for now.